like we're right at 12 o'clock. And as I once again kind of navigate this new menu screen for our webcast, I'd like to introduce Chris. Chris has been a friend of mine for quite some time, and I'm really excited to have him share his knowledge on nutrition. I mean, honestly, I look at Chris as a very, very brilliant human being. He really has a way of taking all this knowledge that he studied for years and years and years. He has a PhD, and making it simple and easy for the rest of us to understand. We, most of us, don't have time to go to school as long as Chris does or did. But his brilliance really comes in taking complex concepts or ideas or strategies for nutrition, making them simple that each of us can follow. And I think you're going to find just a few things that he shares today that you can really take home and start to bring into your life when it comes to nutrition. And I know Chris and I have recently touched on the concept of not trying to take on too much at one time. In fact, if you try to knock out 10 different things, if you're jotting things down today and 10 things, writing notes and thinking, I'm going to take care of all these 10 items, it's probably going to lead to overwhelm. So pick one or two things that Chris talks about today and start to take action on those items. So a little bit of background with regard to Chris. He's a consultant to a number of media outlets, including corporations like the Discovery Health Channel, the Dairy Council, Clif Bar, the best tasting nutrition bar in the industry. He's a sports nutritionist for Under Armour, their TNP Training Council. He's been featured with Chef Emeril Lagasse, the guy who likes to kick it up a notch. He was the nutrition expert for the book LL Cool J's Platinum Workout. He got to go on a media tour with LL and his crew. He's working on another project with Denise Austin. He's written over 500 articles for publications like Men's Health, Weight Watchers, Men's Fitness, just all kinds of stuff. This guy is everywhere. And I'm real honored to know Chris and call him a friend. Awesome guy, very knowledgeable. And when he teams up with his wife, who also has a PhD and very brilliant, I mean, they make a really incredible 1-2 punch. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris. Chris is going to touch today on some of the nutrition myths that are out there, and we'll do a little bit of Q&A. I'll ask some questions. We'll open up the lines, let Chris allow you to ask Chris some questions if you have any. But, Chris, just why don't you start out by sharing some of those myths out there when it comes to nutrition, because it's so easy for us to get caught up in reading in a magazine, watching the latest news report about how, for example, somebody sent me an email a week or two ago from a local paper, small paper, saying that in order to lose weight, you have to eat 12 or 14 grams of sugar or less, and that an apple has sugar in it, and if you eat that apple, you're pretty close to that 14 grams of sugar, and it'll pretty much blow your diet. So it just, I mean, how many people do we know who are overweight today because they ate too many fruits?
Right.
Just not going to happen. So share with us some of those myths that you come up against all the time.
Okay. Now, that's a great example. And, you know, I think that one of the biggest myths, and, of course, you know, now being this time of year, early January, where we're seeing tons of infomercials and books out there and everything else, you know, the problem is that to get a book published or even to get – or, well, first to get a book published, you need to get some kind of hook because everything has been done, so to speak, in terms of the publishing world. So everyone's trying to get their unique hook. And in the grand scheme of things, any diet book you read, whether it's a low carb or high carb, whatever it is, food combining, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is eating less calories. And the same thing with magazine articles. You know, magazines are published every single month, so the editors are trying to look for their own unique twist so people pick up the magazine. And again, what that does to the consumer, though, is that leads to confusion because there's lots of contradictory information out there. And I think one of the biggest myths that I see, and that's kind of come and gone, but I still get questions about it all the time, is about carbohydrates. And are they, you know, if I eat carbohydrates, am I going to get fat? And that kind of goes along with what you just said. So, you know, that therefore because an apple is a carbohydrate, if I eat an apple, I'm going to gain weight. Like you said, there's not a big issue in this country or a big concern with people eating too many fruits and vegetables. So people didn't become, we didn't become an obese society with two-thirds of the population being overweight or obese because people started eating too many vegetables and fruits. So that's one of the biggest myths I hear. And the fact of the matter is, and we could talk more about this later, but the fact of the matter is that carbohydrates can be fantastic for you, just like all nutrients can be fantastic for you. What it really boils down to is the quality of the food you're putting in your body. So, yes, an apple is a carbohydrate. It's absolutely amazing for you. On the flip side, so is, licorice or Tootsie Roll or soda. Those are also carbohydrates. Of course, there's a big extreme or big difference between those two. So to say the blanket statement that, this nutrient is bad or this nutrient is good is not really telling the whole picture or telling the whole story. So that's probably the biggest myth that I hear or question. And regardless of how much data is published out there, saying one way or the other, the different foods that are good or bad, so to speak, I still get that question probably daily about what foods I can or cannot eat or food groups if I'm trying to lose weight.
Excellent. So licorice would be a bad carb, or maybe if we get away from the word bad, not a real supportive carb for energy and to fuel the body so that the body has the energy it needs to function optimally in life and to lose weight, but an apple or an orange would be obviously a much better carb.
There you go. It boils down to that.
One of the things that I've heard you say a number of times, and I share this with people as well because I think it's so simple, again, yet brilliant. Start your meal with fruits and vegetables. And I can't remember if you said, look at your plate, half your plate should be fruits and veggies, or if you just say start your meal with fruits and vegetables. Why is that so important?
Well, if people are looking at just eating fruits and vegetables on a daily basis, I say that because most people aren't getting enough. And when you look at the data, surveys have been done, the average American is eating only 2 fruits or vegetables every single day. And it's not uncommon to hear or to get people turn in their food diaries or things like that and to see 0 fruits and vegetables in an entire week, let alone a day. So an easy way to make that, to make people eat more, encourage them to eat more, is to say don't eat any meal, whether meal or snack, without a fruit or vegetable included. And then if you're starting that meal with the fruit or vegetable, it ensures that you will eat that. I've been guilty of this myself, that there's times that you think, you have a side salad with dinner, but you eat your entire dinner first, and then, the last thing you want is that salad because you're so full. Well, if you flip that around, you'll get those vegetables first, and you will be more full, so you'll actually eat less of the other calories, which are usually more more calorie dense. You'll save calories that way. So starting each meal with a fruit and or vegetable will help you save calories. It gives you tons of nutrients, help you save calories. So if weight loss is a goal, it's a great way to do it, or if weight maintenance is a goal, which, of course, for a lot of people that don't want to be gaining weight, that's another way to do it. So very simple. Every single meal or snack you eat should have a fruit and or vegetable with it.
Excellent. Can you eat too many fruits and veggies?
Not really. I guess you could if you sat down and ate 400 pounds of carrots or something, but I definitely would never say people can eat too many fruits and vegetables. If somebody has diabetes, for example, that'd be something we'd look at specifically. But really, I'd be very happy. I'd never limit anybody's fruit or vegetable intake.
What would you say today, the recommendation for most people? If I know we have people out there who need a number. Is it 6 fruits and 8 vegetables? What number would you be comfortable people striving for each day?
My goal would be 10, a minimum of 10 total fruits and vegetables a day. Okay.
Perfect.
And I'll say quickly, some people think, they might be thinking 10 fruits and vegetables a day. This kid's insane. Think about what is a serving. So a lot of times people don't think about, they might be getting more than a serving in a piece of fruit if it's bigger. One whole banana is very often 2 servings because they're a little bit larger. Same thing with vegetables. It's a cup of raw vegetables equals a serving, or a half a cup of cooked. So, you know, for example, my wife and I, we have, you know, sauteed spinach in an omelet. We may put literally, you know, 6 cups in there raw, and that cooks down to very, very little bit, but that's a whole lot of servings right there in one, you know, one food in particular.
Excellent. And speaking of cooking your veggies, I've often heard that when you cook them and you cook them down, do you lose any of the nutrient value as raw best?
You do lose a little bit of the nutrients if you're depending on how you're cooking them. If you're boiling them, then yes, you're going to lose some nutrients. You know, if they say steaming is a little bit better, or microwave. Raw, I mean, you're going to preserve a lot of the nutrients that way, but there's some fruits and vegetables, and the first that comes to mind is tomatoes, where there's a particular nutrient called lycopene that's actually better when it is cooked. So, you know, if you can eat most of your stuff raw, great. But again, there are some vegetables or some like tomatoes that are actually better when cooked in terms of some of the nutrients in there. So
sure.
I wouldn't go crazy about that. You know, don't boil them to death, but enjoy them.
Okay, excellent. The other thing that I've heard you say that I want you to share with people is, and maybe this goes back to carbohydrates, or maybe it just goes back to some of the foods that have kind of been created over the last 2 or 3 decades. When you're striving to select foods, or when you're eating foods, pick foods that have 5 ingredients or less. And I love that. It's, again, it's so simple. But if you look at a box of Wheat Thins, so many people think Wheat Thins are a great healthy snack, and certainly they're better than a lot of options out there. But there's like 30-some-odd ingredients in Wheat Thins, where you look at Triscuits, and there's like 4 ingredients.
Right.
So based on that rule of thumb, I would think Triscuits are a much better choice for people. So talk about 5 ingredients or less.
And again, I came up with that to have a simple guide for people. So like you mentioned, Wheat Thins is an example, and we can go on about any package. Most packaged foods, the more ingredients there are to create a flavor that we know of, the less your body really, I think, the rest of your body wants them. So the reason I suggest eating less ingredients is because we want to eat things as close to, basically as close to the ground as possible, as close to nature as possible. You know, Pop-Tarts are notorious. There's one brand or one flavor that has 50, it takes 57 ingredients on the side of that Pop-Tart box to make
Wow.
that flavor. You know, you shouldn't have that many ingredients in an entire week. And thinking about, you know, again, sometimes people think, well, that's impossible. I've heard that a lot. Well, think about foods that have few ingredients. Again, fruit and vegetables, obviously we talked about those. That's the one ingredient there. You know, things like raw nuts, poultry, fish, dairy, grains, those have minimal ingredients but are fantastic for you. Those are the foods we want to focus on, and instead of all those packaged foods. So if it comes in a box, it comes in a bag, you want to limit those types of products and look for more foods that are in their natural state and have a lot less ingredients. You want to actually taste the food, not the flavorings that are added to it.
Awesome. So basically what I'm hearing you say, eat as close to nature as possible, or basically eat like our grandparents or our great-grandparents did. I mean, they didn't have, you know, obviously they didn't have all the fast food that we're bombarded with, but they didn't have all these boxed and prepared foods that you can drop into a microwave in 2 minutes and have dinner ready.
Exactly. That's exactly
Very cool.
Right. And you know, eating like our grandparents, it's such a simple rule. And you think about it, you know, our ancestors had no idea half the foods that we eat today. So very simple rule that I think is a very effective way in terms of not just weight loss, but overall health.
Very good. What about counting calories or tracking calories? What's your take on that? How important is it for us to keep track of the amount of calories that we take in each day?
You know, I think it can be an important tool, especially when you're trying to lose weight. And do I think you have to count calories for the rest of your life? Absolutely not. But so many of us, our portions have gotten out of control, and that's whether we're eating out in restaurants or fast food or even just at home, that we lose sight of what or how many calories are in foods, are in portions of the foods that we eat. So I think people are often shocked when they do start to write down the foods that they eat. They're keeping a journal or doing it online. on several, you know, one of the many sites that are out there, I think it's a very eye-opening practice. And research has been shown, or research has shown that that fact alone, simply writing down or recording the foods that you eat and the beverages, that alone causes weight loss. Again, because it's eye-opening, and you realize maybe how many calories you're actually taking in, or if you're doing a lot of mindless eating, meaning you're not thinking about the foods you're putting in your body, you know, walk by a jar of nuts or a jar of candy, put a handful in your mouth, not even thinking about it. Well, if you're actually writing it down, it increases your awareness. So I think counting calories is a good tool just to increase that awareness. I don't think you have to do it forever, but I do encourage people to do that in the early stages when they're trying to lose weight. Again, just to kind of readjust your eye, what is a true portion, and get people back to reality, so to speak, in terms of how many calories they're actually taking in.
Perfect. Yeah, it's so easy, because if we go to Chipotle, and even if we're building what we think is a healthier burrito, you know, that thing can be 1,100 calories, and that's
absolutely
not with cheese or sour cream. And, you know, I think I've heard you, or I've read where, you know, women striving for body fat reduction, you know, 1,200, 1,500 calories is a safe general, you know, guideline for most women.
Mm-hmm.
Some will be a little more maybe. But you can see how quickly, if you go to Chipotle, or here in Cincinnati, we have Skyline. And Skyline's an interesting place because, you know, you get this chili and spaghetti, and then they top it with cheese. And they even have this thing called, like, Sky Way, My Way. I don't even know what it's called. But just the standard portion of cheese that they put on is massive. And
mm-hmm.
then you can actually double the heaping on there. And I've seen that the three-way, the large three-way, built up to, like, 1,400 calories.
Wow.
So I do agree that awareness is so important. Give us another nutrition myth that you've run into.
Okay, another common one, I mentioned the carbs. Another common one is fat. And I think we've gotten away from the low-fat mantra that was popular in the early 90s or so. But I think people are still very scared of fat. And I think what's important is, and I said this again, but it's so important, is the quality of the calorie. So fat is fantastic for you. Definitely should include it and need to include it, because it's what's known as, there are things called essential fatty acids, meaning you have to get them from the diet. Otherwise, to be honest, ultimately you die. So I think we need to look at the quality, and not all fat is bad. You know, we want to limit the trans fats and the saturated fats, but things like omega-3 fats, which come from fish and nuts like almonds and walnuts and flaxseed, those are fantastic for us. So I think, you know, it's interesting you just asked me about calories, and I do think counting calories is an important tool or a useful tool, but I hate for people to get so caught up in calories that they're not looking at the quality of the foods they're putting in their body. So yes, calories are important, but it's not just about calories. We need to look at what makes up those calories. You know, 1,200 calories of rice cakes, or of, you know, a thing of that Skyline chili you just mentioned. Yes, it's 1,200 calories. Of course, it's not great for us. So let's look at what those calories actually comprise and what they're doing for our bodies. So I guess another myth then is looking at the quality of the foods we put in our body, and whether that's fat or carbohydrates or even protein. It's not just calories, even though they are important.
So it's not just the total calories, but obviously the quantity. And that's where I think the whole starting your meal with fruits and vegetables is brilliant, because I think you mentioned it just packs a nice, mean punch when it comes to nutrients, compared to the amount of calories that you're taking in. I mean, you can eat a ton of fruits and veggies and not get a lot of calories, but you're getting the quality of the calories is outstanding.
Exactly. And that's what we want to focus on, that quality. There's actually, if you're looking at weight loss specifically, there's some very cool research done at one of the main places is Penn State, and it's called Volumetrics. They look at, you mentioned the volume of the food. You can get a lot of fruits and veggies for very little calories. Well, all this research is looking at basically how much can we eat and get the least amount of calories for that. Fruits and vegetables, very high volume food, meaning you know, they're packed with water and nutrients, of course, so they fill you up without filling you out. So that's our goal, is to get as many foods as we can get in our body without getting a load of calories.
Very nice. And I heard you mention rice cakes. Are you saying rice cakes aren't healthy?
If you enjoy styrofoam, they're fantastic. Other than that, they don't do much for you. They don't really fill you up. They don't taste great, in my opinion. So there's definitely better options than rice cakes. I got to be honest
okay.
with you.
All right, great. Well, the only reason I ask that is because we hear, you know, it's marketed as one of those weight loss foods.
Right.
You know, where hey, here's this fluffy, puffy little thing, and now they make them in all different flavors. I mean, those things taste like those little cheese puffs now. You know, they come in that flavor. They come in the caramel corn flavor. And I think that people are being misled into believing, hey, if I just eat a couple of these rice cakes, I'm doing something good for my body. Maybe it's a little bit better than some of the options out there, but probably not the most nutrient-dense option.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So when we go back to that, the quality of the foods out there, we want to get the most bang for our buck. So, you know, when you're trying to lose weight, you shouldn't think of that you're starving on this horrible diet and you can't eat X, Y, and Z. Instead of thinking about that, you know, all these foods I can eat, let's look at everything I can eat. And that's what comes back to the quality of the foods you put in your body.
Very cool. And before we wrap up, we got a few more questions for you. I do want you to give our listeners maybe a simple plan. If they are new to making nutrition changes, and you and I both work with lots and lots, we're very, very fortunate and blessed to be able to work with lots and lots of people, and everybody comes from a unique starting place. We have people who have really focused on nutrition for a good portion of their adult life. Maybe some people are really fortunate and they're raised with parents who taught them quality nutrition skills. But I think the vast majority of people that we work with, they were raised in environments where maybe it was three meals a day, you know, meat and potatoes, or a lot of sugar growing up in their homes, just it's like a whole new education to them. So before we finish today, I want you to put together maybe just a simple plan that people can start with so that they don't feel overwhelmed. You know, where do they start? We'll get to that in a minute. I was talking to you recently about, I think you mentioned to me that the average American consumes 450 calories, drinks, I should say, 450 calories. Why is drinking calories not great for us? Again, if we're striving to maintain a certain number of calories each day for weight loss, what's the issue with drinking our calories?
You know, number one, you said that 450 calories. That's the average American every single day. If you do nothing else but give that up, you'd lose about a pound a week. So the problem with drinking your calories is you're not getting the nutrients that you need. You're also not filling up. So if I drink, let's just say I have whatever, something for lunch, and I have a soda with that meal. Well, that soda is not going to fill me up. So it's not like that, you know, 250 calories I just drank from that soda, I'm going to eat 250 calories less. That's going to be on top of the food that I'm already eating. So that's one of the main problems with beverages, is your whatever you drink in terms of calories are just added on top of your food intake. And then, again, a lot of the where people get a lot of their calories, you know, soft drinks, of course, are not great for you. A lot of the lattes, so any of the coffee shops now, some of them have 400, 500, even 600 calories, you know, in a simple, what you think of, run into your coffee shop and grab a little, whatever, double venti latte. You know, several hundred calories later, your body's going to be you know, horribly confused. You're giving it all this sugar, this fat, and everything else. So the less we can drink our calories, the better off we'll be. That even includes fruit juice. Much rather have you eat whole foods and actually get those nutrients and fill up on the nutrients in them versus drinking calories.
So it would be better to consume an orange than to drink a glass of orange juice.
Exactly.
Even if it's 100% fresh squeezed.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm not saying that's a horrible, horrible choice, but it's so easy to overdrink. You know, to get one serving of fruit, like eating a whole orange, is equivalent to 4 ounces of juice, which is only a half a cup. Very few people sit down and have a half a cup of juice. Think about it. You know, you have two cups of juice. That's like sitting down and eating four oranges, which most people wouldn't do in one sitting, but it's very easy to pound that down.
Makes sense. What about things that we commonly think of as a better choice beverage-wise, like low-fat or fat-free milk? Would you say it's okay to have, you know, a glass of milk? It's packed with protein. Would that be okay in terms of drinking some of your calories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the few exceptions of a drink that has calories that is actually great for you. So like you said, it's a great source of protein. Of course, some other nutrients like calcium and potassium. So something like that, like a low-fat milk, will be a great option, whether you're having it over, you know, cereal, or if you're having a glass of milk with a meal, particularly for women, and as women age, where their calcium intake is usually lower. So that's one of the exceptions. Again, if you are drinking milk, though, you'll go for the lower-fat or the fat-free options instead of the whole milk or you know, even 2%.
Okay, great. What about supplements? You know, we hear so much, again, a lot of what we hear comes from marketing or advertising. You know, supplements are great. I mean, to me it makes sense, multivitamin. But especially this time of year in the Midwest where we're both located, you know, it happens to be a sunny day today, but maybe we're not outside in the sun because of the temperatures. Vitamin D deficiencies. Talk about supplements and when they might be appropriate, and touch on some of the hype and, you know, some of the fallacies of supplements.
Okay, yeah, there's definitely a lot of those. So there's more hype than reality with dietary supplements. And right now there are over 29,000 different dietary supplements available. So, you know, we hear about a lot of the same players, you know, the fish oil, the vitamin D, so on and so forth. But, again, there's so much more hype than anything. Now, with that said, you mentioned vitamin D. There are definitely supplements that I think that most people should take on a regular basis, vitamin D being one of them, particularly where, you know, where we live. So when the sun does come out, it's not particularly strong anyhow. Especially in the dead of the winter. So, you know, if we're in the summer, okay, we are getting more sunshine, which is, you know, called the sunshine vitamin. Your body does make vitamin D from the sun. But currently government officials are looking at, or scientists, I should say, are looking at raising the RDA, so recommended daily allowance for vitamin D, because they've shown over and over again that a majority of the population are deficient in this powerful vitamin. Particularly for women who are pregnant and or breastfeeding, because then the baby is taking those stores of vitamin D from the body. So that is one of the supplements that I do encourage people to take on a daily basis. You know, I guess I should say first, you know, when you go to your doctor to have general blood work done, you should have your vitamin D tested. A lot of physicians are doing that now, just on their own because of the high rate of deficiency. But most people go get their lipid panel done, also get your vitamin D tested and see where your status is. But most data is pointing to people supplementing with about 1,000 IUs of vitamin D a day. And then again, if you are deficient, you talk to your personal health care practitioner if they would want you to go higher than that. But that's a general starting point, 1,000 IUs a day of vitamin D, definitely a smart one for most people to take.
Okay, very good.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, just you go ahead.
I was going to say two more. Multivitamin, I think that most adults should take, or all adults should take a multivitamin. Basic, doesn't need to be, you know, extra mega woman with 8,000% of every vitamin and mineral out there. Just a very straightforward multi. And then a fish oil, I think, is a smart supplement for most people to take, most adults, because, again, most aren't getting enough of those healthy omega-3 fats. So those are the wise ones that I would suggest that most people take. And then, of course, after that, we look at an individual basis if people would benefit from other supplements.
Okay. I've always heard it's better to get those vitamins from real food as opposed to taking a pill. What's your take on that?
100%, absolutely true. So, you know, the ones I mentioned are more difficult to get from food, the D and the omega 3s, D in particular. So we do make it from sunshine, like I mentioned. We also get it from milk because milk is fortified now. But then the other dietary sources aren't usually common in most people's diets. So things like, you know, anchovies or canned salmon are great, I think, great for you in a number of ways, also great sources of D, but most people aren't eating them a ton. But yes, it is best to get any vitamin, mineral, or any other nutrient from food because it's not just an isolated nutrient, then you're getting so many other components of the food as well. Same thing with omega-3s. You know, absolutely, American Heart Association recommends at least 12 ounces of fatty fish per week, and that's defined as things like tuna or salmon and other fish like that. But then we have seen that many people have benefited or do benefit from a slightly higher omega-3 intake as well.
Very good. Last question on supplements, because we get asked this as fitness professionals and certainly you as a dietitian, we get asked this a lot. What about fat-burning supplements? And, you know, this is kind of a hot-button topic for me because I try to share my take on it, and I'm amazed still after sharing my take, people want to know, you know, that's great, but I want the simple fast pill or shake or whatever it may be that I can take to burn, melt, explode fat off my body very quickly. What's your take on fat-burning supplements?
All right. That is one that you should definitely steer clear of, or the one category, I should say. And the reason is, well, lots of reasons, but one of the main reasons, there's no quick fix. So even if something was effective, some dietary supplement was effective, unfortunately, people use those as crutches and, they, you know, driving through McDonald's and washing their fat-burning supplement down with a soda. I've heard that from people. And then, you know, the scary part then, too, is just recently there was a recall on one of the very popular fat-burning supplements called Hydroxycut because of about a dozen or so reported cases of liver damage. So we have to be so careful with these different products that are out there. And fat, quote-unquote, fat-burning supplements are a major culprit because they have a lot of different unique ingredients in there. So generally, the research has suggested that they don't work, unfortunately, in terms of burning fat, so it's not that easy. But then even worse than that, they can actually be dangerous. So definitely steer clear of those, no matter how promising the salesman, the infomercial, the magazine article, or however pretty the model is, whatever it may be, don't fall for fat-burning supplements. You know, it's very easy to lose weight. People know how to lose weight or lose fat, I should say. They need to put the work in. It takes some effort, but fat-burning supplements won't give you the results that you want.
So there's no quick fix. I mean, it takes effort. I mean, anything worth having, you know, you got to put the work in.
Right. And really, you know, I always say that if you're trying to set goals, you just have to do something. Otherwise, nothing will ever happen. It's one little step. It doesn't have to be anything major. Just take that first positive step in the right direction. Ultimately, you'll start to see those results that you want.
I like to tell people that, in a nutshell, you know, get your exercise in, modify your nutrition. At the end of the day, have a small to moderate calorie deficit. Strive for that most days of the week. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I have people shooting for a 500, maybe at the most 1,000 calorie deficit in a day. Well, how do you feel?
Yeah, for sure, and that's what it takes. So, you know, we talked about the importance of calories. Calories are important at the end of the day. So if you're trying to lose fat, you need to be in a caloric deficit. That doesn't mean starving yourself. That doesn't mean, you know, living off the junky food that we talked about earlier. It means eating high-quality foods, but overall taking in less calories than your body is expending. So, of course, exercise, and, of course, make those smart nutrition decisions. But you won't be able to lose weight if your body isn't in that calorie deficit.
Very good. One last question for me. Then we got a question from Monica. Talk about sugar, refined sugars. Why are they so bad? And why do they seem to be addictive? Because I like to ask people to raise their hand if they're willing to admit that they either love sugar or they feel like they're addicted to sugar. And if I'm in a room with 20 people, 10 people raise their hand at least.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, whether sugar is addictive or not, there has been some data suggesting that there are some, quote-unquote, addictive properties to sugar. Interestingly, when addicts actually are coming off their particular drug, sugar is often used as a replacement, which is interesting. But, you know, why is it so bad? There's a number of things. Number one, there's no nutrients at all in sugar at all. No matter what sugar, I don't care if it's organic, turbinado, brown sugar, date paste, whatever, sugar is not healthy for you. There's no nutrients, but it's adding calories. So think about, you know, one of the prevalent foods that sugar is in, and that's soda. So you have soft drinks. There's nothing in them at all except sugar. You're getting a ton of calories. You're getting zero nutrients. So with that said, there's no benefit. It also affects some hormones in your body or some other things in your body. Insulin is a hormone in your body that sugar affects. Well, insulin is known as it's a storage hormone. You increase your insulin levels, ultimately, you will gain more body fat. So when you eat more sugar, you know, lots of things happen in your body. Your glucose goes up, therefore your insulin goes up. You have too much insulin, therefore you have too much body fat. So that's just kind of obviously a very simplified explanation of the biochemistry of what happens, but that's pretty much what it is. Zero nutrients, but lots of calories.
And is high fructose corn syrup, is that worse than if I were to scoop out table sugar and drop, let's see, a teaspoon, tablespoon into my coffee in the morning?
At the end of the day, I don't think it matters, to be honest.
It doesn't matter. Okay.
It doesn't. You know, there was some research for a while looking at the correlation of high fructose corn syrup over the years, and the intake has skyrocketed, and it's correlated to the obesity epidemic. But sugar is sugar. None of them are great. I myself have said that high fructose corn syrup has, you know, in the past, I've said that there may be some interesting components to this high fructose corn syrup. But really, all sugar is bad for you, regardless if it's organic, non-organic, or whatever it may be.
Very good. All right. My friend Monica asked a question here. She likes to drink smoothies as a way to get fruit, and she wants to know, is that okay?
It depends. If you make your own smoothie, it can be absolutely wonderful. If you're going to those very popular places that now, like Smoothie King or the others that are out there, you could have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of calories in what you think is a healthy smoothie. So if you make your own, you know, add a little bit of yogurt, some fresh fruit, and then, you know, either some milk or just a splash of juice, that could be fantastic for you. But remember that those calories add up pretty quickly, and a lot of the smoothie shops, they add lots of syrups and sometimes frozen yogurt and other things that really pack in the calories. So I know Smoothie King is a culprit. They have one product that I know of it that has about 700 calories. Again, people think smoothie, they think healthy. Well, it's not always the case.
Wow. 700 calories from Smoothie King.
Yeah, and not all products, but I know one of them in particular does have that much.
Sure. One more thing I'm going to do. I'm going to open up the phone lines because I just checked on the web, and it looks like we have several callers. We've got a bunch of people actually listening at their computer. Let me open up the lines real quick just to see if we have anybody who wants to ask a question by phone. And let's see how I do this. All right, everybody is live. If anybody has a question for Dr. Chris, go ahead and ask away.
Dr. Chris?
That's hard to hear. I heard somebody talk, but I couldn't hear much more than that.
Morning.
Can you ask again? Okay, it sounds like there's some feedback in there. Anyone else have a question? And we'll try to get back to that first question. I'm not sure if it was a question or just background noise. We have the country's most brilliant dietitian on the phone right now. Anybody have a question? I know I've got a bunch.
I'm feeling slighted over here. Come on.
We could make this thing like 3 hours, Chris, but I want to be sensitive to everybody's lunch time. All right, so I'm going to just go ahead and mute the lines again. And so, Chris, go ahead. Let's just say that I'm brand new. One more question for you. Beth, ask, what should I eat in the morning before I work out at boot camp? I want to have minimal calories. I'm starving after boot camp, and I need to eat a rather large breakfast after working out. So she wants to know what to have before camp. She's watching the number of calories that she takes, but after camp she's starving, and of course she's got to eat before she goes on with her day.
All right. I know if you're in Brian's boot camp, I know he doesn't really work you very hard. So, right, Brian?
Right, Chris.
So you definitely want to eat something before you work out, absolutely. And this question comes up all the time in our camp as well. But think about something that is easily digested. So that would be maybe something like yogurt. Often works really well. It's not quite solid, but it's not quite liquid. So a little yogurt could be good. It has some carbohydrates, also has some protein. Sometimes some women in our camp have enjoyed like a piece of toast and a hard-boiled egg, or a piece of toast with a little bit of peanut butter. You know, fruit works really well. So something that's small gives some nutrients to your body so you have the energy to work out in camp, but at the same time you're not having those foods sit on your stomach or sit in your stomach that you feel as you're running around for the hour that you're in camp. So the two food categories, so to speak, that you should not necessarily avoid at this time, but limit are protein, actually three, protein, fat, and fiber. So I did say an egg, so that's not a ton of fat there, but you don't want to have too much protein, fat, or fiber because those do take a little bit longer to digest, and those are going to sit, kind of feel like they're sitting in your stomach as you're moving around. So something light, easily digestible. I always tell our campers that I'd rather have them eat less and feel a little bit hungry and have to work up to, you know, eating a little bit more food than starting off one day and eating way too much and feeling sick.
Very good. How much time should they give before the workout and eating?
You know, that depends on what you're eating, but, you know, knowing the camp is at 5:30 in the morning, I'm assuming most people aren't going to want to wake up at 3 to have a nice full-course meal. But, you know, about a half an hour or so before usually gives enough time to kind of, you don't feel like you just ate it, and also being realistic, you also don't have to wake up way too early to actually get some food in your body.
Perfect. Makes sense. Okay, I'm a new person to nutrition and exercise. Give me a simple plan that I can start to implement right away. One where, you know, I have very little background in nutrition. I've just kind of, you know, did what my parents taught me through modeling or example, and I'm ready to make some changes, but I don't want to be overwhelmed. Give me
okay.
a simple plan to put me on that path
okay,
that I need
perfect.
To go on nutrition-wise.
That's a good way to phrase it because I think people do often get way too overwhelmed and trying to make every single change in their entire diet. So what I would do is look at what you're actually taking in now and start very, very small. Maybe it can be as small as adding one fruit or vegetable per day. So I mentioned, you know, you asked me what a recommended serving or per day would be, and I said up to about 10 would be great. That's overwhelming for most people. Think about adding one fruit and or vegetable per day, do that for a week. Stick with that behavior, and then add something else. Maybe you replace, if you eat, you know, white toast on your white bread in your sandwiches, maybe switch to a whole grain bread. Or, you know, 1 week, you know, eliminate your calories from the beverages that you drink. So think about one behavior change per week that you can make, no matter how small. Work on that every single day. And then the next week, continue with that behavior and then add another positive behavior. You know, we talked about that there aren't quick fixes. This isn't, if you're looking for an overnight, you know, fat loss diet, this isn't how to do it. This is, if you want to be permanently successful, lose weight, maintain that body weight, this is how you do it. You make those small changes on a weekly basis, and ultimately you'll be successful. You know, some of those changes you try may not work out well for you. So that's why we like to call it trial and success. You try some things out. Some may work. Keep on to those, keep those behaviors. Some may not work with your lifestyle. So then you learned that, so move on to a different behavior. But think about really not doing much more than one per week. It's slow, but it will be effective in the long term.
Well, and how should I track if I'm on target or not? What's a good way of over time? You know, I'm committed now. You know, I've tried. I've been to Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers, and I had my calories drop down to 800. And, you know, I had a little bit of success, but long term I wasn't successful. I bought the Bowflex and tried that thing out, had no clue how it worked. I bought an ab rocker and 6-second abs. I've done it all. So I'm a little bit frustrated. Mm-hmm. What's a good way for me to track if I'm on track, if I'm on target? You know, I'm looking at this as a year. In a year from now, you know, I want to be 25 pounds lighter. I want to feel better, be healthier. How do I track this progress? I know I can come in and do that evaluation with you guys, but what other ways can I make sure week in and week out I'm on track?
Okay, a couple things. Number one, so 25 pounds, that's 2 pounds a week, or 2 pounds a month, excuse me, if you're looking at a year process. So easily doable. The scale, I don't want it to be your best friend. I don't want you to live and die by the scale, but the scale is your friend. If you're overweight and looking to lose body weight, the scale should be moving in the right direction. So definitely, you know, and you look at the research, people who weigh themselves at least once a week are more successful at losing and maintaining their body weight. So again, I don't want people to live and die by that number, because there's so much more to your health and to your body than just what the number says on the scale. But at the same time, it is a good tool that if it's not headed in the right direction, you know that you need to continue to make other tweaks. Of course, the other assessments that you guys do in camp, body fat, we really want to focus on that as well, because you're exercising and you're making these nutrition changes. So hopefully that body fat is going in the right direction, not just the scale weight. But then also look at, you know, and I'd even encourage recording this. Think about how you feel. You know, do you have more energy, or do you have enough energy, sufficient energy? Are you happy? There's so many different emotions that you can go down, right, or think about. Focus on how you're actually feeling when you're making these changes, because, like I said, there's so much more to overall health than just your body weight. You know, maybe you're on medications. If maybe like diabetes, for example, ultimately that'd be great if you can get off those medications, and you can if you're losing weight and exercising. But that could be another thing you monitor. You know, monitor your blood sugars if you have diabetes, for example. Monitor, you go to the doctor and get your blood work done. Monitor your different lipids. Is your cholesterol down? Is your triglycerides down? Things along those lines.
All right, very good. One more question came in, Chris, and then I'm going to let you go. Melinda, my friend Melinda from Northern Kentucky Boot Camp, she asked, what is your opinion of the sugar substitute stevia?
Stevia, that is, for those who don't know, it's gotten a lot of press lately, because there's a new product out called Truvia, which has some stevia extracts in it. It's not an artificial sweetener, but it's not true sugar. In the grand scheme of things, out of the sweeteners that are out there, if you're going to use something that doesn't have calories, that would be a better option. And they just recently got approved for what's known as GRAS status, generally recognized as safe. So as I always say with any of those types of things, even though it's technically not an artificial sweetener like an aspartame, still limit it. But in the grand scheme of things, it is better, in my opinion, than the artificial sweeteners.
All right, very good. Well, Chris, I want to thank you. And also for those listening, go to moreresults.com and sign up for Chris's newsletter. Again, he sends out these kind of little simple, easy, but brilliant tips all the time via newsletter, M-O-H-R, moreresults.com, moreresults.com. You can register for his newsletter. He sends it out very, very frequently. Chris, thank you so much for taking your time today, and we'll look forward to doing this again sometime in the near future.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you, and thank everybody for tuning in today.
And thank you for listening. Yep, we'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, bye-bye.